This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
During his lifetime, Joseph Smith was considered a notable religious figure. But in recent decades, his position in the world of important religious figures in America and throughout the world has risen considerably.
Coming up next, Impressions of a Prophet, Part 2.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Last week, we noted the promise that was given to Joseph Smith that his name would be had for good and evil among all kindreds and tongues. Now, in the 19th century, studies of his life and ministry began very slowly. But today, inquiries into his legacy have an increasing momentum and enthusiasm. This week, in part two of our show, we will illustrate some of what's happening among scholars and laymen alike as they try to understand Joseph Smith, this very complex man.
Richard E. Turley, Jr.
As you look at surveys that have been done over the years about popular figures in the United States, popular historical figures, what you discover is that Joseph Smith is rising in the public consciousness. Now that the church has expanded throughout the United States and into over 100 foreign jurisdictions, people are becoming more and more aware of Joseph Smith and the church that he founded.
In 2005, a significant event was held at one of our country's centers of learning, the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. It was a national conference commemorating the bicentennial celebration of the birth of Joseph Smith.
John W. Welch.
The bicentennial celebration of Joseph Smith at the Library of Congress began with a conference about Jonathan Edwards that was held there in the Library of Congress. And as people sat around the table talking about what a great influence this Puritan theologian and leader had had on the United States, people realized that Joseph Smith would soon be celebrating his 200th birthday. And that set in motion conversations between me and Richard Bushman and other people, along with Bob Millett, who had been at that Jonathan Edwards conference, to see if we couldn't put together a conference at the Library of Congress about Joseph Smith. It was an easy sell.
Mormon and non-Mormon scholars alike from all over the world were invited to participate in the conference.
We had at the Library of Congress some of the greatest religious scholars who have studied world religions, the history of American religion, but all with an awareness of Joseph Smith. It was an unusual collection of people who know Joseph Smith both inside and out. When we selected people to come to the Library of Congress, we really had no idea what they would say. We didn't know that we would have the kind of celebration and recognition of the greatness of Joseph Smith. Robert Remini, a great American biographer, was one of the people that we brought in as an outside speaker about Joseph Smith. One thing I learned from Robert Remini, a non-Mormon historian who spoke at the Library of Congress, was that Mormons have tended to mute the importance of Joseph Smith in American history. That we're more interested in what Joseph Smith did for us as Latter-day Saints, and we haven't spent enough time appreciating what he actually did for our country. Margaret Barker, a Methodist scholar from England, spoke about Joseph Smith's insights into the world of Jerusalem in 600 B.C., she was impressed with how right on target Joseph Smith was with understanding the political and religious issues of Lehi's own day. Things that we as biblical scholars have only recently come to truly appreciate. As I walked out of the Library of Congress with Margaret Barker, who is a Methodist, Old Testament scholar, and past president of the Society for the Study of the Old Testament in England, she looked around in awe at the architecture, the setting, and all that had happened over the last 2 days of our conference together. She said, "We will look back on this experience and remember that important things began here." She said, "I don't know what those things will be, but I know that this will be a beginning of important things yet to come."
Also in 2005, another bicentennial celebration was held, this time half a world away, in the Parliament House in New South Wales, Australia.
Ronald O. Barney.
A historian of religion, a scholar of world faiths at Griffith University in Australia, Professor Wayne Hudson, said some very interesting things about Joseph, only an excerpt of which I will read. "I argue that there are grounds for construing Joseph Smith as a genuine prophet of world historical importance. A case can be made that the world church has much to learn from the astonishing achievements of Joseph Smith. Indeed, taking respectful account of this one human being may make possible major advances in multi-faith dialogue, including dialogue with Islam. Joseph Smith was an outstanding American religious leader and visionary who has still not received the universal recognition he deserves, partly because sectarian and secular prejudices have prevented many scholars from grasping the astounding religious reality manifested in Joseph Smith and his revelations, above all, the Book of Mormon."
Just in November, the annual meeting of the Society of Biblical Literature met in Boston. The president of that society, Jonathan Z. Smith, a professor of religion from the University of Chicago, gave the presidential address. In it, he castigated biblical scholars for being too narrow and only focusing on the Bible as their interest, of their world of interest. He basically said that in order to really understand your own scripture, you have to at least know one other sacred scriptural tradition. 4 or 5 times he mentioned the Book of Mormon as one of those sacred texts that biblical scholars ought to know about.
Today you can go to an academic conference and find perhaps 50 graduate students who intend to spend all or part of their professional time or all or part of their free time studying Joseph Smith or the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. To me, that's quite a change in events. And I expect that this new crop of graduate students who are pursuing master's degrees and PhDs will make a tremendous contribution to the overall history literature on this subject.
As more and more people come with questions about Joseph Smith, it places a responsibility upon the Latter-day Saints to be accurate and conversant with their history.
With all of this interest in Joseph Smith, and with all that we know about the importance of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which he restored, Latter-day Saints have a great obligation to do their homework and to present our story in a way that will be understandable to people who don't speak our inside language or share our assumptions.
Right now, the works that have been written on the church over the last year remain among the most widely read works on religious history in the country for that same time period. Now, that's remarkable. That probably would not have been the case 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but it's been the case over the last year or two. I think the reason for the change is that suddenly we have, at this period of time, before the public, works that meet the highest standards of academic discourse and have been written by people who have devoted their lifetime to the study of these subjects.
Latter-day Saints always will be and always should be zealous about proselyting, about bearing their testimony, and about speaking of spiritual experiences. But there is a time and a place for that. There is also a language of the academy. There are ways in which the mind and the intellect operate, which we should also be able to utilize and to communicate through. President Packer once said that Latter-day Saint scholars not only need to be, but have to be bilingual, being able to speak both the language of the spirit and the language of the mind.
One of those sufficiently fascinated with Joseph Smith and the Mormons to have dedicated her professional life to their study is Dr. Jan Shipps of Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis. And she's a devout Methodist.
Jan Shipps.
As I was trying to get and understand what Mormonism was, I hadn't realized that I had to go back and learn about Joseph Smith. It was called The Prophet Puzzle, Reflections on Joseph Smith as a Reflections on the Mormon Prophet. And this was published, as it turned out to be, the very first article in the very first issue of the Journal of Mormon History. What it was an article that was trying to help me as a non-Mormon. I'm a Methodist and have been a Methodist my whole life, and helped me as a non-Mormon try to make sense of this person who seemed to have two personas, one that was left behind by those who believed his message, and one that was left behind by those who did not believe his message. It just didn't seem to me to make real good sense to say that here you have this person, and if you ask these people, this is what he looked like, and this is who he was. And if you ask these people, this is what he looked like, and this is who he was. They were totally different. What I did was to sit down one day, I just said, there ought to be some way to do this. Now, I didn't come to that full conclusion by any sense. I wrote this article and I said, we'll never understand Joseph Smith until we understand both of these sides of this very complex man.
Dr. Shipps came to the conclusion that Joseph Smith fit the criterion that scholars had applied to prophetic figures from the past.
And this is the way I think about a prophet. A prophet is one who speaks for God. But that's not all. You have to have another part. A prophet is one who speaks for God, around whom a community of believers develops, whose first article of faith is that the prophet speaks for God. Well, this happened with Joseph Smith. There is no doubt about it. Joseph Smith did not start out saying he spoke for God. He did not start out calling himself a prophet. He called himself a seer, a translator. You know, these are how he described himself had to do with the Book of Mormon.
So how does one devote their life to the study of Joseph Smith and the Mormons and not become one? We asked Dr. Shipps that question.
It is very hard for people to understand how I, a very devout Methodist, can keep working on the Latter-day Saints all these years. People say, is Joseph Smith a prophet? I can say, of course. he's a prophet because this is what a prophet is. Mm-hmm. And I love this. Then you look at the Book of Mormon. Is the Book of Mormon what it claims to be on its face? And then that I can't answer that question. I don't know whether the Book of Mormon is what it claims to be on its face, but I know what happens when people believe that it is.
Yes.
Because I can study the people when they believed it. And so that's how I approached the study of Joseph Smith and the study of early Mormonism. I have always felt comfortable in reading what Joseph said when he said, a prophet is a prophet only when he is acting as such. He was a man. He had weaknesses and he had strength as a man. But you look at prophets are also human beings. But he never claimed to be God. Or he never claimed to be the only Son of God. So that Joseph Smith is a fascinating figure. He's a man and he's a prophet.
There was another person in the scholarly world who found Joseph Smith a fascinating individual, Dr. Aziz Atiyah. He was born in Egypt and became a professor of history and languages, eventually ending up at the University of Utah. He was also a world-renowned scholar of and an adherent to Coptic Christianity.
It is from this Coptic faith that thrived in the post-apostolic period after Jesus' own life that Dr. Atiyah makes some comparisons about Joseph Smith and about first century Christianity that I think are quite significant. I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts from an interview. In describing Joseph Smith's uncanny knowledge about first century Christianity, Dr. Atiyah says this: how Joseph Smith knew all this, I don't know. I say he was very erudite, more than Mormons think. He knew more of the Copts than the Copts themselves. Where he got his information, I don't know. Mormons describe him as poor, ignorant, countrified. They're wrong. Joseph Smith was a very learned man. He could have made a best president of the United States, not just president of the church. Mormons claim Joseph Smith received his insight from God. I say he received it from the Copts. Mormonism is derived from Coptology. There were enough materials available for him to have read about the Copts, and that may have been true if he would have lived in London.
Sure.
But he lived on the fringes of Western civilization. Dr. Atiyah says he must have had access to these things because it doesn't enter my mind that he got them from Revelation. It doesn't enter my scientific mind.
As more and more people ask, who is Joseph Smith? It's the intent of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to provide the resources to ensure that the history is presented correctly. Hence, the monumental effort that's gone in to gather and publish the papers of Joseph Smith.
Whenever you have someone such as Joseph Smith who garners a lot of attention from the public, you get twin phenomena. You get the phenomenon of getting additional correct historical information about him. And then you get the phenomenon of people telling stories about him that may in part be based on their recollections of something they heard or something someone told them or something a friend of a friend told them. And that generates its own kind of aura or mystique. And one of the values of the Joseph Smith Papers Project is that it allows us to cut through a lot of this mystique and a lot of the misinformation that comes from rumor and get down to the reality, to the hard facts that are established in documentation.
Joseph Smith was a significant religious figure to the Latter-day Saints and also to the larger religious world. Now, one of the things about him that is most interesting, most compelling, is that despite the remarkable things that he did, he was just a mortal man. One of the purposes of the Joseph Smith Papers is to provide the resources for those who want to know that man.
The Joseph Smith Papers Project allows us to see Joseph Smith in a wide variety of settings where he's facing the normal challenges of life. Some people, particularly Latter-day Saints, have come to believe incorrectly that because he was revered as a prophet of God, he somehow escaped the vicissitudes of life. When you read Joseph Smith in the pages of the Joseph Smith Papers, you see a man who's facing the same kinds of challenges that you and I face. And what that does is allow the reader to see him and to gain a deeper respect for the way he met those challenges himself. They begin to think, well, if he could face these challenges, which were often worse than anything I've ever faced, then surely I can handle the little portion that has been allocated to me.
Richard L. Bushman.
When I wrote an article on Joseph Smith in the Ensign, they wanted to clean up all the spelling, all the grammar, in the quotes from Joseph Smith, because they didn't want to appear like an illiterate ignoramus.
Right.
Now we are publishing a set of volumes, exact replication of everything that's in the manuscript. Bad spelling, spots, bad grammar, the whole works. And I think what it represents is a feeling that we don't always have to present a polished prophet, you know, who's just the perfect gentleman, ideal in every way. But we think this is a prophet who can stand for himself, and then you can look at him through and through, up and down, whatever he wrote and said, and he'll still come out shining. So I think we're sort of changing our perspective on how we present ourselves.
Much has been written about Joseph Smith, and much more will yet be written about him. With the foundation, then, of the Joseph Smith Papers, all future publications about him will and must be held to a higher standard of accuracy.
So the Papers Project by itself provides a wonderful foundation of materials for people to read if they're interested in Joseph Smith. But I see them as providing a foundation for an entire body of work, both serious academic work and popular work, that will rest upon this foundation in the future as people look at it and decide that they'll use the Joseph Smith Papers for writing biographies, for writing more popular accounts of Joseph Smith that might be read by an even broader public.
As people become more and more aware of the way in which his thought and his followers have had a great influence on American culture and thought, they will want to know, what did Joseph Smith himself have to say on many, many issues that are of contemporary concern?
So I see that the Papers Project as leaving a long legacy of value for future generations, a value that exceeds current biographies on Joseph Smith, a value that exceeds a lot of the transient kinds of secondary materials.
The task, however, of understanding Joseph Smith in his entirety and explaining him to a diverse audience, well, that's not an easy one.
Philip L. Barlow.
He himself, as everybody knows, acknowledged that he was an enigma. I wouldn't have believed what happened to me, he said, if it hadn't happened to me. I understand it's too outrageous. No man knows my history. So Joseph Smith was both a rough stone rolling, as Richard Bushman captures his words, and a embodiment of no man knows my history, as Fawn Brody captured these words. He is an enigmatic figure. I don't think we're ever going to resolve that, because his claims transcended the sphere that scholarship can get to. The supernatural claims don't lend themselves to final assessment by scholarly methods.
Sometimes the devotion and attention that are given to Joseph Smith by the Latter-day Saints, it's misunderstood and it's misjudged.
Marlon K. Jensen.
President Hinckley has often said, all that we have in the church today is but a lengthened shadow of Joseph Smith. And in saying that, I want to be careful to stress that that Joseph Smith himself would have viewed himself as a means to an end, not as the end itself. So Joseph's important within that context, and as the originating prophet of the church, the one who restored and brought back to earth that which was lost sometime after the time of Christ. He deserves, I think, our deepest introspection and examination and our greatest efforts to preserve and to attempt to discern all that he did and why he did it.
It's true that some historical figures become larger than life in the eyes of their admirers. But in most cases, that happens because of a lack of historical documentation, where you can't go back and really imagine what it was like to be with that person, to listen to him speaking, to walk a few miles next to his shoulder. But we have enough that we can take the various perspectives given to us by different people about who Joseph Smith was. We can read what he wrote and what people said he said. And we have enough that we can put together a controlled understanding of who he said he was, of the testimonies that he bore, of the things that he suffered, of the insights that he captivated his audiences with. And with that, we can appreciate him both as a historical fact and as a revealed monument.
And so there'll always be that balance, I think, in that perspective that we'll be trying to maintain as a church, not making more out of Joseph than he would make of himself, but making sufficient to know that this was one of the truly great people of all time. You know, when I stand, figuratively speaking, at the feet of Joseph Smith, to me it's a huge mountain. And I believe what Harold Bloom really said is true, and that is that Joseph Smith remains the most unstudied genius of American religious history. I would really be reluctant to say that we'll ever have done enough on Joseph Smith.
In 2006, about 100 people, including scholars and historians and their spouses, went on tour of the locations where Joseph Smith lived his life. They traveled to all the significant church history sites, all the way from Vermont clear to Illinois, describing, as they went, the life and ministry of Joseph Smith. It was both instructive and entertaining. Now, next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, you're invited to come along on the tour, part one. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.